You're listening to the History Today podcast. In this episode, the Russian Mrs. Beaton. In the December issue of History Today, we have a piece about Yelena Molokovits, a Russian housewife whose household manual had a significant impact on culinary and domestic habits in the decades leading up to the Bolshevik Revolution. The author of the article is Helen Samuley, and she talks here to History Today deputy editor Charlotte Crowe.
So I'm very happy to be talking today to Helen Samuley, who's written an article in our December issue about a little known, in England anyway, Russian housewife called Yelena Molokovits, who in 1861 published a book of household management. And in we've described her in this article as the Russian Mrs. Beaton. So I wonder, Helen, if you can tell us a little bit about how you became interested in Yelena Molokovits.
Well, Yelena Molokovits's book, which was published exactly the same year as Mrs. Beaton's in England, was something that was just not available at all when I was a child being brought up, not in the Soviet Union, but by parents who had themselves grown up there. But people always knew about it. And so therefore, as a child even, I heard about the Molokovits book, and as subsequently found out, much of what was said about her, just as about Mrs. Beaton, was actually not true. So subsequently, because I became quite interested in the history of cookery books in general, and also about various social developments in Russia, the two sort of combined in my mind. And when I happily found a copy of a later edition in London Library, which happened, as it happens, had belonged to Arthur Ransome, which in itself made it quite exciting, I thought, well, here we are. Let's do a little bit of research about the lady, and did a couple of talks. People were very interested and decided to proceed to do some work on it.
Pursue it.
Yes.
Is our article the first article you've written?
It's the first article, yes.
Excellent. Yeah. So could you just describe to us a little bit about the situation in Russia in 1861 at the moment at which the book appeared? We know that that was the year of the emancipation of the serfs under Alexander II, and something like 23 million serfs were gradually freed. Mm. So a lot of things must have been shifting in...
There were, and of course it was just the first of several reforms under Alexander II, some of which worked, some of which didn't, some of which were then set back, were abolished more or less by his son after Alexander's assassination. There was a general feeling in the 60s that Russia was finally shifting towards a more European, although Russia had considered herself to be European, well, ever since Catherine the Great, this was finally the great blot on Russian history was serfdom, which was in fact not like European serfdom, but more like slavery. It can be compared to American slavery rather than European serfdom or feudalism. It wasn't a feudal system. So there were all these people who were now not owned by anybody. Most of them were still tied to the land because the communes were left in place, but quite a few started moving out and becoming themselves people who owned land, developed. There was this large development of what could have eventually become a middle class. And in those circumstances, of course, you needed some kind of a guide as to how to run a household. Now, the other side of it, of course, is that if the serfs became free, then the owners of the serfs no longer had quite as many people at their beck and call. So the big households were broken up, people moved, people had to have servants, had to have proper cooks, and so on. Again, you needed a certain amount of guidance.
So can you tell us how Yelena Molokovits fitted into this picture? Who was she?
She was from the middle class. She was married to an engineer and had herself been educated in one of the schools that were set up under Catherine for daughters of nobility. And nobility extends rather a long way in Russia. And had had produced 10 children, I believe, and And she ran her own household, and whether she cooked her own food all the time or whether she supervised very closely her own cook, she was slightly unusual in that respect, because there was this endless complaint that Russian ladies didn't do enough in the house. And so she produced these wonderful recipes, and then she started putting them together, apparently encouraged by her husband. And eventually, when she was 30, this book was published, and it had been passed actually before her 30th birthday by the censor, because in Russia every book that was printed had to be passed by the censor. And so it was actually based, unlike Mrs. Beaton's, oddly enough, it was actually based entirely on her experience. And as her experience changed, and as she moved to St. Petersburg, the books, the subsequent editions of the books acquired new chapters on how to furnish apartments and how to store food in apartments and so on.
Is her experience reflected in the book in terms of the way she writes? Does she write from the first person with reference to what's going on in her life? Do we glean about her life?
Not a lot, not in the first place. In the first place, in fact, it was anonymous. She didn't even put in any initials. She then found, as time went on and the book became very popular, that people copied it illegally or produced, travesties of it, and it was sold off. So she actually, by the time she got before the 50th anniversary in 1911, which was a big event in the history of the book, she found that she had to complain to periodicals that her book had been travestied and her recipes produced in a peculiar sort of fashion. And she then eventually, according to her, very, very reluctantly had to name herself and explain who she was, and actually wrote an introduction to, I think, the 1909 edition. It came out practically every year. A background, explained a bit about her family, why she has this slightly odd surname, and she says her husband's family was the only one that was called Malachovitz. And so we find out a little bit about the way she thinks just from that introduction, but the recipes just have to, and the instructions as to how much to buy, how much to store, where to store things and so on, one just has to glean her existence. Mm-hmm. And the existence of many Russian women from those recipes and from those instructions.
From reading between the lines.
Yeah.
Now, food, custom, religion, national identity were big themes for debate at the second half of the 19th century. How does Malachovitz's work fit into that debate? Was she aware of it? And who were the protagonists of those sorts of debates?
She described herself as being a very conservative, monarchist, orthodox, which was one reason why she didn't like coming out in public, because she felt it was unsuitable for a woman of her views. And in a funny sort of way, though, her book was actually quite enlightened, because the debates about it had actually gone back to the second half of the 18th century. This, in a way, had already been going on for about a century. This whole idea of, is Russia European? Where should Russia move forward? Stop me if you've heard this before, because these debates have gone on ever since. And should it move forward by imitating or copying or aping Western ideas, or should it find some resources in its own, in her own history, or whether, as some of the more extreme, shall we say, Slavophiles said, well, change nothing, just stick to the old Slavic habits, especially with food and production of food and so on. Well, clearly this couldn't go on, because Russia, although potentially an extraordinarily rich country, was also very, very poor and seriously backward. And ever since Catherine the Great, when Russian nobility were allowed to travel freely to the West and people had been sent to study in the West and so on, and then, of course, the army that conquered Napoleon, that swept across Europe, they found that Europe was just so advanced compared to Russia, that there was this great urge to do something about it. Now, as part of that was the feeling that the nobility should pay some attention. So men should pay more attention to their land, and women should pay more attention to the household. And this is, there were several books on that, and in fact, there was at least one other woman writer before Malakhovia Sergeyeva, who did write instructions to Russian women how to run their households, and then eventually started writing about how to run estates as well. So that was all part of this huge discussion, and Malakhovia fitted in that she made it quite clear, without actually making a big issue of it, is that she thought ladies of the house should be very involved in the housekeeping and should actually make sure, shouldn't just sit back and let the servants get on with it, but actually run. And of course, one of the purposes of the book is to explain how to run a household well, how to produce tasty food and good food at a reasonable price. She, like Mrs. Beaton, gives ideas of how to have cheap food as well, but good food.
So Yelena Malakhovich was responding to a growing middle class, broadly urban group of women and men, but the book is called A Gift to Young Housewives. So how popular was it? How was it received?
And it was immensely popular. It really was the gift that was given to young housewives when they were married. And because she actually lived, I think we can trace her to, was probably 1917, 1918, and then she just disappears from sight. But by then she was pretty old, so the chances of an old woman surviving the revolution and civil war are negligible. And so she could actually keep control, if you compare her with Mrs. Beaton, who died young and who's fiscally rather irresponsible husband lost control of the whole mm-hmm. thing. But so she expanded the book. The 20th edition, for instance, is considerably bigger than the first edition, more recipes, although some of them are just variants on the old ones. And it was immensely popular. I mean, the last edition that actually passed the censor in, I think, 1916, certainly published in 1917, was the 30th. So you can see how many had come out. And
so was it distributed all around Russia?
It was in bookshops. People subscribed to it. Obviously, not everywhere in Russia you would get a bookshop. But, you know, the bigger towns would have bookshops. I mean, Russia was considerably a more advanced country than Bolshevik historians made out later on. And it was... She also wrote some other things, and these partly about herbal medication, but partly sort of religious and nationalist propaganda for the war. And those had to be bought directly from her. She gives her address in St. Petersburg, where you can buy it. But the book itself, which is her big achievement, could be acquired anywhere in Russia, and was. And interestingly enough, from the copies that have surfaced in the West, it is quite clear that as people fled from Russia during the Revolution and Civil War, they took it with them as their sort of one of their treasured possessions. Not only Arthur Ransom, it's not quite clear where he acquired it, but you know, the British Library, for instance, has a copy that is carefully labelled by a chap who lived in, lady, it's hard to tell, in Lower Addison Gardens in West London. And it's, you know, these things surface, people took them with them. This was a treasured family possession. And as I say, some generations down, people could still remember the book that...
From their family,
even if the book had long ago disappeared and nobody really knew what was in it. But it was a kind of symbol. And things did get, especially for food, did get pretty bad in the Soviet Union. Even when there wasn't famine, it was there were shortages, and the food was very dull, and it was just a nightmare trying to cook. And so, in Malakhovich's book, became a kind of a symbol of the times when food was plentiful and there was choice, and you didn't just queue up for hours and hours to get some mince. Well, to get some meat that you then took home to mince or whatever. And so there was this...
Was it a nostalgic image.
Well, it was partly nostalgic and partly a reaction to what was happening around the reality. And her book wasn't reprinted in the Soviet Union until the very end, but in the 80s, there were a few bits and bobs. There were a couple of little books published of a few recipes of Malachowicz's book.
Do you think the book actually survived in Russia itself then, during, after, in the Soviet period? People just put them in the back of the shelves and...
It must have done, because as soon as the Soviet system fell, it started being reprinted.
Now, I must ask you to explain a little bit about what happened as Bolshevism drew near and the revolution approached. What happened as far as Malachowicz was concerned then?
Well, it is hard to tell. I mean...
She fell out of favour.
Well, she did fall out of favour. I mean, first of all, she presumably died in about 1918. As I say, she was born in 1831, so she actually was fairly old. We do have some record of her being listed... by this time Petrograd, about the inhabitants of Petrograd in 1916. So she was still alive then, which is pretty astonishing. But as a, during the war and the revolution. Now, after the revolution and the civil war, there were such shortages of food that nobody could possibly think of cooking for Malachowicz anyway. But she was actually castigated by the Bolsheviks, and indeed some of the more tamer writers and even poets would write really quite unpleasant things about
because she
her.
Was perceived as bourgeois?
She was perceived as the bourgeois. She was perceived as the woman who glorified good life for just very few people, which of course is the exact opposite of what she was, because she was actually producing recipes for the ever-growing middle class. I mean, and for everyone, and if you go through it, and I think Mrs. Beaton had the same problem. People always think of her as just writing for the very rich, which actually isn't true. And if you go, she has, Malachowicz has dinners for every day of the year. And this is meat days and fasting days, which is very important for Russia because the Russian Orthodox calendar has so many fast days, that of four different variety, the more expensive, the less expensive, and so on and so forth. And she gives prices for things. And she also gives menus for servants, which are, let's go. So really it is there. But as far as the Bolsheviks were concerned, this was it. This was the epitome of everything that was wrong. The oppression of the thing. And of course, what they had to contend with is that people's own memories were rather different.
Yes.
That they remembered it rather the time when almost a lot of people, a far wider proportion of the people, could actually have very nice and varied food.
So she's resurfaced again a little bit in the 80s. And just finally, can I ask you where we stand with her today? Now you've been doing this work about her, but in Russia... are her books being republished?
They are. I saw one quite recently in the Russian bookshop in Waterstones.
Is there the same craze about food developing in Russia
the thing in the Soviet period, you basically had one cookery book, which was published in the 50s with a quotation from Stalin. It was early 50s. The quotation was subsequently taken out, and which was... all right, and in fact, strangely similar to the ideas that Malachowicz was propounding. But now there are lots and lots of cookery books in Russia. Many of them are actually just going back to the argument of whether it should be Russian food or foreign food. I notice Russian cookery books published there are of Italian food and of French food, Provençal food, whatever. But there's also a kind of upsurge of interest in Russian food. Sometimes it produces some very strange results, but that's inevitable. And certainly Malachowicz has been republished several times. It's been shorn of various things. I mean, it's obviously been shorn of the prices of goods. I mean, that would be preposterous. Of the ideas of how to furnish kitchens and apartments, all that's gone. So you really, and some of the recipes have gone because they are just variants.
Were they like Mrs. Beaton's, very time-consuming and requiring fiddly?
Some have, mm-hmm. some have. But the basic, even the most recent edition I saw in a bookshop, and I was with someone who said to me, look what you've started. I said, well, lie to me. which actually doesn't explain who she is. Previous editions of her books explained, you know, this is it, and this we are now learning from our grandmothers, because in the Soviet period we didn't know how to cook, but now we are once again looking to our grandmothers. To be honest, it's great-great-grandmothers by now.
Yes.
As to how to cook and what a good idea it is and so on. But this latest edition, although it has quite a long chunk from her introduction, and it's got her recipes, doesn't actually explain who she is, doesn't give any idea. No context. This is just a cookery book by Yelena Malachovets. We don't know, but it was reprinted again this year in Russia, and it just carries on. And there is, at one point there was a restaurant opened that was supposed to be producing her food. Well, I never found out. There are certainly blogs that mention her. So she's become a big person. But quite often when you read these things, it's obvious they don't exactly know much. It's just, once again, she's the kind of the symbol. The good life that we are now going to have, because the Soviet period is over. And despite the difficulties, we are going to go back and have that.
Well, if anybody does want to know any more about Helena Milokovic, they can do no better than to read your article that you've written for us that's coming out in our December issue. Helen Zamuoli, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's all for this week. You can read Helen Zamuoli's piece, The Russian Mrs. Beaton, in the December issue of History Today, which is out now. Also in this issue, Adam Rovner on an early 20th century attempt to create a Jewish homeland in Angola, Julie Peekman on the 18th century appetite for erotic fiction, Jonathan Hughes on the reign of Richard II, and Gillian Tyndall on new discoveries about Charles Dickens' London. You can also get History Today onto your iPad, Kindle Fire, or Android tablet by visiting www.historytoday.com/app. Finally, you can listen to previous podcasts or comment on anything you've heard by visiting www.historytoday.com/podcast. Thanks for listening.